What has changed from when we were kids to now? It's just this is immediately going to make me sound old. Like kids just need constant entertainment. I get it. Technology has changed our brains and stuff, but it's there's something more than that. I feel like every conversation I have lately is with another parent. It's like, my kid, we just got done going to like Sky Zone trampoline park and then like the arcade and then meeting with all their friends and getting like Chick-fil-A and getting donuts and getting Starbucks. And then we get home and they're like immediately they're like,
what are
angry that there's not something to do.
I was just about to say what triggered this. So it was observations of conversations with parents who are saying this.
It's just constant. Yeah. That's all we all talk about. I mean, with people in the kid range of like,
yeah, what do you remember
10,
doing on a Saturday?
And it's, I mean, I've had so many conversations lately that are, we're actually trying to figure out why is it so drastically different now. And then I talked to a friend the other day and she just goes, Steve, it's us.
I know where the
it's us. We're the problem. It's us.
I mean, how are they getting there?
Yeah. And I'm like, yes, we've set them up to expect that, but still, I mean, I'm talking about us and friends who are very like intentional about parenting and having boundaries and like not too much screen time and all these things. And it still is just off. So you don't have that with how old's Leah?
I know.
She must be 11.
I know. Right. But see, let's just also throw this in the mix though. I am a little older. See that? I think that also has something to do with it. So I didn't experience that as much with my older kids. So I think even if Leah is of the age of it, she's not getting it because tough cookie. It's almost like your others didn't get it. So you're not. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So it could just be that my mindset isn't as much there. Yeah. I do notice it, but you're right. I don't notice it as much with her 11-year-old, but I do notice it a lot with that 6, 7-year-old, 8.
It is.
You're right.
It
okay.
is crazy.
Is it exhaust you? Do you want to do anything about it?
No.
You just wanted to call the observation out. Do you kind of like it?
What do you mean?
Like, do you kind of like that you go from place to place? Because you like to do things.
I mean, I was a kid who always wanted activity.
Right.
And that's why I like have this whole thing I'm deconstructing as an adult. Of, like, I'm too much for people, you know? Because it's like I always wanted, like, when's the next friend? Right. Next friend. I would call all my friends in a list until someone said yes.
I did the same thing. Yeah, me too. Right? Like, I did the same thing. Okay.
So I get it.
But you were more driving it versus your parents a lot.
Well, what I mean is like I can relate with my kid because of that. I remember being that. But it's at an all-time high now. It's like, it's so different how they're just constantly complaining that there's not enough excitement and thrills.
I know.
It's like, where did this come from?
I know. The excitement and the thrills have changed.
Yeah.
It's like the level is higher.
Yeah.
And also, we used to be more in control of it because we were much freer to roam.
I think part of it is like, well, they see things, you know, whatever, in videos of like, that give them ideas where we didn't have those inputs.
No ideas. Our only ideas were
just
in our
go
head.
In the woods, get on your bike.
Right.
But yeah, and then we also have to check ourselves because it's like, well, don't, it's not fair to them to be like, I'm already doing this all the time. Like, when I was your age.
I know, I try not to do
I didn't get
too.
Any of this. I would have died to go to the trampoline park once in my whole life. But like, that's not their fault that we created that life for them.
I know.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Okay, so more serious note.
Oh, okay.
So there's the people who do like New Year's resolutions in, you know, October.
Right. Like,
then there's the, okay. You know,
are you looking at me because you think that's me? I'm a September girl.
Oh, okay.
September. I was like,
sorry. Yeah. You're so much better than that. But it's like, then you've got kind of the maybe Christmas break or New Year's, you know, day where people are really on top of it.
Yep.
And then you've got the people who are like, well, you also have the people who are like, screw goals. I'm not doing it at all.
Right. They're just.
But you've definitely got, and we kind of see a lot of this, the people who are maybe late January or February. It's like, man, I still haven't like figured out what I want to do.
And they're
this
feeling
year.
A little behind the game.
Or they like see something that inspires them. And they're like, that's what it just hasn't like clicked yet.
Yeah.
Or they haven't been able to think about it yet. So for those people, since
you got something for
February,
them?
one thing that worked well for us this year and last, Ashley and I went to a coffee shop. We just kind of did a coffee shop date to talk about what do we want for this year. And for us, it was a combo of like goals, like what's on your mind and mine, as well as trip planning or calendar, like for the year.
Well, I love that.
Trips and budget around that and stuff. So I just wanted to share that because I've told some people that we did that, they're like, oh, that's a good idea. I never thought of that. And I said, yeah, it worked great for us because we're such different personalities that if we ever tried to talk about goals before, it would just be an instant, like, sink the ship. I mean, it was really hard because we approach it so differently.
Yeah.
And of course, since I do this for a job, I've got like 10 pages of goals and she's got one and then feels like terrible. You know, it's we just do it so differently.
Yeah.
Or I have big dreams and she's more practical. Mm-hmm. So it worked really well. Just go to the coffee shop and it made it, I don't know, more fun. Mm-hmm. We just talked through it, shared with each other. And now
but you guys take it even a step further than that because I know you. Mm. You meet for coffee throughout the year to kind of make sure that's that rhythm part. Mm-hmm. You revisit making sure that they're happening.
Yeah.
You put this coffee date on your calendar throughout the year. And I feel like one of the things you guys are doing is planning, but also revisiting those kind of planning goals.
Yeah. Well, even I was talking to Abigail, our greenhouse photographer. She and her husband, Ben, they call it team retreat. I thought this was so cool. She goes, yeah, team retreat. I'm like, what do you mean? She goes, like, we just go, like, get away and rent a cabin or Airbnb, and we just do, like, I think for them it's like a whole weekend of just a fun getaway, but it's all focused around their intentions and what they want goals-wise. Mm-hmm. So I nerd out on this, so to me that felt like
That's what we did this year.
A dream.
So Adam and I, that's the way we did it. We went away for the weekend. And that's what we did. We hit we planned what we wanted to do this year and what our goals were and also what our relationship goals were.
How did that start though? Was it like, did you bring up the idea or how?
It started from always being exhausted after the holidays.
But then did you present the idea?
I think so. Like, I think I was just like, how's that feel? He's like, sounds great. Okay. It was like.
Yeah. Because sometimes that's the hang up for couples, especially. Yeah. It's like. Well, the person who wants to do it, how do you bring it up to the other?
He's kind of a great, like, go with the flow guy, you know?
Yeah.
So I think he was like, sure.
You were like, and if we don't.
You're dead.
Well, and then another piece that came out of it was, I'm trying to really be intentional this year about, like, what are my needs and managing my energy? I think we all know about time management, but energy management is probably more important in this current world we're in.
Yeah.
Because... like,
I'm so with you.
Right? It's just like none of us have enough time, but our energy management's a little more effective. So that comes up in coaching a lot. Like,
it's different than time management.
It's different. And it's like, what are your needs? What do you need?
Mm-hmm.
And like we talked about on the last podcast, it's like, well, you need some more time with your family. You need some more energy into some of the work things that fuel you. And I'm trying to make that shift too, because I've been learning more about my needs.
Yeah.
And for any, I mean, probably all of our listeners are people helpers where they tend to focus on everyone else's needs around them.
Yeah.
And so that your own suffer. Mm-hmm. I'm like, this is the first time in my life, I'm 37 and the first time I've ever thought about my own needs.
Yeah.
I mean, it's crazy to me, but it's been helpful to start to recognize them. So that's a shift. And then one other piece of it was I'm trying some new rhythms with morning and night. And the idea is consuming in the evening and creating in the morning. And I really like this because just for where I'm at in life, in the evening, my brain is pretty tired and it's hard to create anything. Mm-hmm. I actually used to be great. Evening was like my best time to create. But right now, that's a good time to just like watch a show or chill out, just like do very consumer things.
Mm-hmm.
And also not feel guilty, because some people now, it's like we have all this guilt around anything that's consumer. I'm like, no, sometimes that's helpful for me.
I never feel guilty about that.
I like need to watch a show to go to bed.
Yep.
That's just me. And then create in the morning because I have a fresh brain and I can usually kind of think
sharp,
quick, better. Ideas come.
Mm-hmm.
It used to be the opposite for me, but I'm choosing kind of that time frame. Consume in the evening, create in the morning. Something like that. So for anyone listening, it could be a different rhythm, but similar. Mm-hmm. Like, what are the different modes for different times of the day?
Today I had just so much fun interviewing my friend and old neighbor, actually, Lauren McKay, who was a teacher in the public school system, who faced so many challenges that she shares even before pandemic, then they escalated during the pandemic that eventually brought her to starting her own business, and she didn't even realize she was starting her own business. It is quite a ride and so interesting, and actually gave me goosebumps while I was talking to her. And then she actually shares about, as a business owner, what it's like to go from having total structure to no structure at all. You will love this episode. You will love her energy and you will learn so much. Enjoy. This is so cool. I just have to tell our audience how we met, because we're neighbors. But yeah. Like, who knew we would, like, it was just such a crazy world, because we lived together when we both had little ones, right? Mm-hmm. You just had Emmy, and she was what, just one?
Yep.
Yep. And she was your first. And I had Leah, who was my fifth. So yes. You are a generation younger than me. And we just kind of casually met. And little did we know that our girls would become such great friends and that we would meet each other as neighbors, because we were both doing it together in terms of mothering.
Yeah. Well, I have to say, Sunday, I needed you a lot more than you needed me.
But I loved that you needed me. Does that make sense?
I did need you. You've been coaching me since the day I met you.
It was so much fun to watch you. I mean, your husband, this is Lauren, everybody, Lauren McKay. And it was interesting because then you had baby number two and your husband was in medical school. So life was hard.
Life was hard.
It was a hard season. Yeah.
Yeah. And you had already done it 5 times.
Yeah.
And so you made it seem so easy with all kinds of, like, somebody can give advice and teach you all at the same time without it sounding like advice or teaching you. So, you know what I mean? Like when you say things like, have you ever thought of maybe while you do the dishes, and then no one will cry. And it's like, oh, that's a great idea.
Right. Oh, so great. But then you survived. And now you have how many kids?
3 children.
And what are their ages now?
Grady is 6. Quinn is 9, almost 10. And Emmy is 11. So, now we're out of those hard years. And
I know. Do you really, Jorge, do you feel like you're out of the hard years? Because I mean, I totally do, because I have 4 grown and only 1 11-year-old at home. But how about you?
I feel like I'm always in a new phase of hard.
Okay.
Right. Now we've hit middle school with a daughter, and there's that, and things that I didn't expect there. And then my middle child is a middle child, and she's, battling being lost sometimes. And so there's just new phases of hard, but nothing as physically demanding as those first years with, you did it too. I had 2 babies 16 months apart. My husband was never, ever home. Mm-hmm. And then having no money and trying to do it all and trying to work and trying to take care of your kids and just it all being new. That was tough.
Yeah. Yep. I don't know if I've told you this yet, but I was interviewing this really wise woman who is an executive coach, and she was telling me the stages of motherhood. And she said the toddler years are the years where we are physically exhausted.
Yeah.
And then the elementary years, we are logistically exhausted.
True.
And then the middle school and high school years, we're emotionally exhausted. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, of course, I knew all those things intuitively, but I love the way she just like, whoop, like,
right.
She captured it.
Right. And then there's some people like you had all 3 at the same time.
Yeah.
You had a toddler, you had a teenager, and you had a middle schooler, and you had one headed off. I mean, my gosh.
I know. Yeah. And then there was the whole letting go, like, thing happening too. Yeah. And then I had a blind grandma living with me.
A blind grandma, and then a father-in-law.
Yeah, life was insane. Right.
Golly,
It's fun to look back. Life feels kind of easy right now. It really does. And so you're actually on vacation in Vancouver. So I just also, thanks so much for taking
on vacation in Vancouver. Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. My family is skiing. I am not. And I typically do, but I hurt my knee. And so I need to have some knee surgery at some point that I keep pushing off.
Yeah.
And so
it's time for that.
I haven't wanted to face that. Yet,
yeah. So interesting. I just want to tell people, like, we've been talking about this for a while, but I just want to tell our listeners why you actually reached out to me at a phone call one time because you listened to our podcast and you were like, you know what? It's frustrating sometimes because the things you talk about are, we talk a lot about a lot of corporate things, and you were a teacher.
And you're like, there's a lot of things we cannot do or think or feel or experience that you are talking about because we are teachers. And that was the beginning of our conversation of thinking, I need to have you on the podcast. So that context first was the reason where I wanted to have you on, was that. So we're going to talk about that journey. But my very first question to you is just, I love to ask people first, just what was your very first ever job? Like, ever?
Yeah, so I started thinking about this morning because I knew you were going to ask that. And I remember always wanting to work. It was just a thing, like, for some reason, it made me feel like grown up or something. And I guess I also wanted money. So I think the very first job I ever took on was like mowing a neighbor's yard. Yes. And so I remember mowing a couple of lawns, and then I got the guts to go up to I lived in a teeny tiny town of 500.
Yep.
There were not a lot of opportunities for employment as a teenager. Yes. I mean, you could work at the pool in the summer, but the summer is only 3 months a year. You could wait tables if there was out of the two restaurants, your friend had quit. So it was kind of hard to find work. So I took a job working at the local drugstore, old-fashioned soda fountain.
Great.
So what was great about that job was I would go in as soon as school was over, which was probably 3 o'clock. And then, you know, it had the U-shaped counters with the round stools.
Yep.
So I would do the coffee club. It was the older people in town came in every day at 3, pour their coffee, then get a nickel tip. And then my friends would come in for milkshakes. So it was a social job. And then I think I closed at 5. But it taught me to do dishes and take out trash and be polite to the older people in the community. And it was a very old school, you know, Baptist kind of town in the South. And so I learned a lot in that job. It was really interesting to have to deal with all the people from the community that they made that their little afternoon.
It feels like
the things I heard too.
Oh, I feel like that couldn't have been a more knowing you, a more perfect job for you.
Great.
All the things you get to hear, and then also just being super social. It's just like you're very good at those things.
It was fun. Yeah.
You're very good at this. Yeah. Well, thanks for sharing. So I just also, next thing I want to do is like, what was your like snippet journey to, because I already told our listeners that you landed as a teacher. What got you there?
So there were two catalysts that got me there. So when I was in high school, like I said, I went to a little tiny high school, and I was kind of one of those people that was like, I'm great with bees and I'm going to have a good time. And then it came time for college and I hadn't paid much attention to any of it and ended up going to VCU, which was great. And I realized that I didn't really have a passion for any of the things that were on the list except French. I loved French. I took French all through high school. Right. I had gone on one school trip to Europe with, you know, what you do with your high school French teacher. So my dad had seen my grades from my first semester of college, which were awful.
Oh no, you had a lot of fun.
Awful. I played all of the drinking games and I went to all of the parties and I did all of the things, but my grades were horrible.
Yeah.
So, you know, and at the time, college wasn't nearly as expensive as it is now, 1999. So he said, look, you have one semester just to get straight A's. And if you don't, this is off. I'm not paying for any more classes. We're done. That's it. So he said, you need to declare your major. You need to figure out what you're good at. And you need to get straight A's next semester. So I decided to declare French because it was the only thing I really loved. And then I realized I couldn't speak French and I didn't know it very well. And now I was a major. So it was back in the olden days of like classified ads in the newspaper. I found an ad for a family that needed an au pair. So wrote them the old handwritten letter, mailed it off, and got a letter back saying, you can come live with us this summer if you would like to work with us. So great, right? Bought my plane ticket. Over there, lived with them, loved them, met a huge group of friends, and I went over every summer working for them for 4 summers.
Wow.
When I came back from that, I graduated college and then went over and taught English in France for 1 year.
So your major was French?
My major was French.
Okay.
If you've ever been a French major or know a French major, there's nothing you can do with a French major.
Yeah, I know.
Like being an English major.
Right.
You have no skill set besides talking a lot or being able to write a paper, read a book.
Mm-hmm.
So I decided to go over and work for there's an exchange program between the French consulate and the American consulate. So I went over and I taught middle school and high school English to French students. But I didn't know that was my passion. I moved back and I got a job in an office. Ooh. And I have never hated something so much in my life. It was quiet. It was sterile. It was the same list of tasks every day. I hated every single second of being in a desk, in a blazer, knowing exactly what tomorrow looked like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, awful.
Awful.
You're like, I can't do, you know what? You know, sometimes I tell people that part of the job process is knowing what you don't want.
Hated the smell.
Yeah.
I hated the desk. I hated the chair. I hated the mailbox. I hated the phone ringing. I hated a list.
Oh, nice. I
hated it all. Mm-hmm. So I backed the old drawing board in the classifieds ads, you know. Mm-hmm. I went ahead and applied for a random teaching position, high school French, in Denby, in Newport News. I lived in Richmond, an hour and a half drive.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as they offered it to me, I just took it. And
did you move to Newport News?
No, I drove every morning.
Oh my goodness.
Got up at 4:30. I had to be at work about 6:45. So it was about an hour and a half to get there. And I loved that job. I love I love an audience.
Yeah, you do.
I love an audience. I loved all these high schoolers because they were old enough to take the initiative to either do it or don't do it. I didn't deal with the parents that you deal with in the younger years.
Yeah.
And it was just great. It was a very diverse school. I'm sure it was Title I at the time, which is, you know, the lower socioeconomic schools get some help with Title I funds from the government. But that makes all these programs at these schools bigger and better sometimes with that type of funding. So I just got to see all these amazing programs and all these things that these students were doing. And I just loved the feel of a high school. I loved it.
You loved it.
Yeah. So then I left there because the drive was crazy and I taught middle school French. And then my husband and I moved to Fort Lauderdale for his graduate work and my graduate work. And I taught more middle school French and then eventually into elementary. I got my master's in administration and supervision because I thought at the time I wanted to be a school principal.
Mm.
Came back, worked another year in Richmond as a middle school teacher. I think I taught English at the time and then moved into administration. I worked as a ESL coach for a while in the city. And then I started doing a little bit of administrative stuff and touching back into what my degree was. But again, I realized I don't like lists. I don't like offices. I don't
came back to you. Yeah.
I don't like boxes. I don't like limits. I don't like rules. I don't like predictable.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, I quickly realized that that was not I'm not ever going to be someone who sits behind a desk and is good at filling out a form. It's honestly, a form at a doctor's office makes me nuts.
Yes. Even that.
I don't go in order. I don't know where to check. I leave everything off.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. So. Which then led you back to
elementary I needed to work. I needed to work.
Yeah.
I get very depressed staying home. I'm an extrovert. I cannot not work. I know that so many people find fulfillment working in their homes and they take pride in that. Mm-hmm. And they're being at home and making a beautiful home and a lovely meal and taking care of their family is real work. And it is hard work.
It is hard work, but you're right. It's so not for everybody.
And it is hard work. And the people who do it and do it well amaze me because I just became so depressed and in such a rut that just, I couldn't. So anyway, I went back to teaching elementary and at a beautiful little school, I took my kids with me. And for close to 5 years there, you know, on and off, it was a dream job and it was the best way to transition out of my teaching career, at least for the moment, because I had such a lovely experience there. But going back to what we were saying earlier, in the middle of those 5 years was COVID.
Yeah, that's where, and I know. And so I was going to move into there. So that's where teaching got really challenging. It did. And so like, bring us there. What was the most challenging part about what shifted?
So I think for me, teaching was always difficult, but it was difficult in a way that you had the camaraderie of your coworkers. You had these teams. We teach as teams. We lean on each other. We have each other. And my children were of elementary age. Two out of three were elementary age. So they were both in elementary school, which meant I didn't pay childcare for two of them. Mm-hmm. That left me with one child in childcare. Mm-hmm. And being able to go into the building every day is the only way anyone can work if they have three small children. I mean, or to have full-time childcare. So when COVID happened and the world shut down, teachers were expected to sit in their homes and teach other people's children on a screen like you and I are on right now, uninterrupted for hours at a time. However, our own children had no parent because if the father wasn't home, as my husband worked in the hospital, my three children were left alone all day while I taught everyone else's children. So I had a two-year-old who was potty training himself in my hallway. My kindergartner, I couldn't take a break from all the other children and say, my child needs me. Mm-hmm. So I'll tend to them. My two children, kindergarten and second grade, had no parent all day while I taught everyone else's children. And at the time, we hadn't quite moved into childcare yet because it was like that really crazy part of the quarantine.
No one knew what to do yet. Yes.
So I couldn't get a babysitter. I couldn't send them to a daycare. It was just me realizing my own children are out here and they don't have me. Mm-hmm. And I am caring so strongly for these other children. And I did. And this was all heartbreaking. But, you know, I saw the parents who worked at Capital One and who worked at banks and who worked on these corporate jobs in the room with their children, helping them, helping them with their homework, helping them with Ms. McKay's keyboard, helping them on everything that my kids weren't getting help from. And most of these people made twice the money I made.
Yeah. Yeah. I get goosebumps hearing you talk about it.
And they made twice the money that I made, and they got the bonuses, and they had their corporations sending them hams and cookies, and we're so sorry, and you don't have to come into the office for a year after this. Whereas when you're a teacher, they're like, well, we'll probably be going back in 3 weeks, and then you're not. Well, we'll probably be going back next month, and then you don't. There's no bonus. So then, you know, also, this is just a tough time. The social media, people were saying horrible things about teachers. I mean, how can you pay them if they're not going to come into the building? Why are we going to keep paying these people if they don't show up to work? We had no choice. No one ever told the teachers and said, hey, guys, what do you think would be best?
Yeah.
What do you think we should do? Never in the 2 years that we lived this life did we receive any different types of polling or questionnaires any different than what the parents got. Remember, as a parent at the time, they would say, would you put your child on a bus? Would you put your child in a mask? Would you put your child in a desk? So we got the same questions, but we are the organization.
We are
the organization. Besides our principal and our assistant principal who worked tirelessly. I mean, that job for them, the logistical nightmare of the 6 feet and the children and the internet connections. And I mean, this is a nightmare for us.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, social media is blowing up and people are saying, I can't go to work because my child's teacher didn't come today or the internet's broken or whatever. And it's like, hey guys. And I did the math on this Sunday, did the math on this today. After, I think I have 16 years of teaching under my belt, maybe 15 of actual full-time teaching in a contracted position. Cause I did like a part-time year and then I taught in France for a year, but I think I have 15 years of full-time contracted work as a teacher. And I did the math today. When I left, I was making $27 an hour, $27 an hour. Target pays between 17 and 25. Starbucks pays 15 to 20. I have 2 degrees. So once you add all that up, And then I realized that my friends are still making six figures after working the same amount as me. Plus, they're kind of back on these like COVID days, helping their kids.
Yes.
I'm not saying it wasn't hard for everyone. It was. But to have to be on the screen, taking care of everyone else's mm-hmm. children while your own children are mm-hmm. floundering. Mm-hmm. To know that there's no bonus coming. Mm-hmm. There's no, the bathrooms at our schools, there's still only one that flushes sometimes.
Yeah.
You still don't get a classroom that always mm-hmm. has heat.
Yeah.
You don't get any sort of perk or big salary increase or anything that makes you feel like you're valued.
Yeah, what is your motivation? Yeah, like what does motivate you?
I mean, we are civil servants.
Yeah.
We do this job because we love the children. We do this job because we love the daily reading. We nurture little people become big, great people. Mm-hmm. But the problem for me was I eventually started to feel taken advantage of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because once childcare kicked back in, but school didn't, mm-hmm. I was spending to have my three children, and you know this because we shared a pod.
We did.
To have my three children in childcare, it was close to $2,000 a month by the time we paid for all three of them over those years.
Yep.
I only made $2,400 a month.
I feel like we talked and you were like, you didn't really make a profit at that point.
I volunteered for $400 bucks a month with a master's degree and 16 years experience.
Yep.
To teach everybody, to teach these kids, which, I mean, I have to say that those children were just so precious. And I still have PTSD from those days. And when I went to write our report card comments that year after the year that we got sent home, and then we all learned together through COVID and it had been so hard. I bawled my eyes out the year that I wrote those report card comments because I didn't really have time to process all the things that had happened and the lack of all the kids didn't get their nursery rhymes. They didn't get their playtime. Mm-hmm. They didn't get, it was mm-hmm. just, it was just so much emotional stress and trauma.
Yeah.
And I personally had an amazing support system. Mm-hmm. My principal was amazing. The parents were amazing. They were dropping mm-hmm. off bottles of wine on my doorstep. People were giving me sandwiches, the parents those years. I mean,
yeah.
I had all the support in the world. Henrico County did a fabulous job with the tech support and with getting everyone a laptop. But when I think to some of those poor teachers who were in districts that weren't as organized, mm-hmm. that didn't make as much money, that the parents couldn't support the teachers the way they supported me. Mm-hmm. I mean, this was a tough time for teachers.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm reflecting back and being your friend, in spite of all the support, I saw you go through a lot of burnout.
Oh, well, I mean, imagine coming out of your office at whatever time it was, 12 or 1, your own two children, three children have torn up your house. They haven't done their work. Their teachers are texting you to do better. Mm-hmm. My husband was at the time.
To do better. Yeah.
To do better. Yeah. Emmy couldn't get online today. And Gwen was, you know, holding her laptop while she was peeing. Yeah. You know, the other children are carrying around the dog and the cat. And my house is torn up.
Yeah, every day.
But even
when you went back and they, you know, and life started to get a little normal, I still saw burnout.
Like that was absolutely a turning point.
It was like the burnout didn't shed. There was more joy and your kids were growing, but the burnout feels like it settled in.
Well, we went back with strict physical regulations.
Yeah.
So we were teaching all day in masks. The kids were wearing masks. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying right or wrong that decision, right? Right.
It was exhausting.
It was a hard decision. It mm-hmm. was something that allowed us to go back into the classroom.
Yeah.
Because the state of Virginia said, in order to go back in, this is what we have to do. To abide by those rules was a wonderful thing to be able to go back in. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I feel like for teachers, so many people said, I kind of miss those days of COVID where I would make some soup and we would all eat together at lunch. And I'm like, oh, my God.
I never want to go back.
My 2-year-old was taking off his diaper and pooping in my hallway. And yeah. I was like crying on the computer, trying to get other kids to do work, you know. And at this second grade age, you're like diagnosing kids who can't read well. And you're trying to teach them. I mean, this is like hard work. Your own kids are a disaster. And then let's go back into the building with plexiglass. And we got masks on. And we're all 8 years old. And so people, you know, they're snotting everywhere. And they're wiping their sleeves. And they're touching all the plexiglass. They're touching each other. And you're stressed to the max. And if you get COVID, you can't work for 10 days. Also, we're not going to pay you after 5. You know, it's like test. Can you watch your kids if they? I mean, it was hell.
Yeah. And but you even after COVID though, how many years? So you did. How many years did you? Because
I taught for a year and a half, and then COVID hit.
Okay.
Then I taught for a year and a half with the COVID restrictions, so that was really 3. And then I did 2 more years.
You did 2 more. Yeah.
I did 2 more years, but I have to tell you, the whole time after this all happened, and we really did. I realized you have little kids, and the only reason this country runs is because you send them off to school and you can go to work.
Yep.
When we don't work, the country shuts down.
Yeah, that's exactly what we learned.
We don't work, the country shuts down. So you have this workforce of people that's 98% women. We all have at least 1 4-year degree. Some of us have 2 4-year degrees or at least a master's degree, which gives us 6 to 8 years of, you know, education on top of that. So you're talking student loans. You're talking the extra time it takes for us to become the people that we are. Then we truly keep the country running for anyone that has a small child.
Mm-hmm.
But did we get any real pay raise that keeps half of my colleagues from having to work a second job? I mean, we are so valuable.
Mm-hmm.
We are so valuable, but society doesn't recognize it. And yes, Henrico did a lovely thing and gave us a pay raise. They did. It was, I think at the end of my time, it came to $48 a paycheck. Mm-hmm. And that was 5%. You know, and I did have lovely retirement and I had good benefits. But when everyone that works at a bank or a marketing company or an advertising firm, or even I looked it up today, the average rate for police officers and firefighters, who are also civil servants like us, their average pay rate after 16 years is between 70 and 90,000. Teachers' average pay rate after 15 years is between 50 and 70. So we're already 20,000 below them, not to mention the extra 4 years of the degree we had to get. And I just, after all of that, and we're wearing the masks and we're working through being sick and we're not taking off for our own children. I've got to come in unpaid to do parent teacher conferences. I have to come in unpaid to do a bunch of training that you would never ask a corporate person.
No, you never
would. Come in unpaid. Mm-mm. 3 days of their vacation.
Nope. You wouldn't. I work a coaching corporate. There's no way. And their bonus at the beginning of the year is what they talk about all year, you know.
Correct.
Yes.
So, you know, at the end of the year, I'm making $2,400 a month after I pay my retirement and my benefits. And if I have a car payment, that's $400. And if I were a single person and I had an apartment, that's $1,200. So now you've got me living on basically nothing after a full career. And you're asking me to come in a week or two a year in trainings that are unpaid, it just felt like such a slap in the face Sunday. It felt like a slap in the face. And I was lucky enough to have my husband make enough money for me to be able to take a break. And
keep going.
I was fortunate enough for that. Most people aren't. And I recognize that I was able to just step away this past year and just take a breather. The sad part to me is the people that I've worked with work tirelessly. They are passionate about this job. They love it. They, from the administrators to the teachers that I worked with, to my team, we love this job. Mm-hmm. but it is with true sacrifice financially.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. So bring us to that place. And thank you for actually talking about that, because I think there's a lot of teachers that will feel seen and heard. That's one of the reasons I wanted to just hear your perspective. And I also think that there's a lot of people who listen who don't fully understand that perspective. And I just think it was real. You did a nice job describing and to just hearing what it felt like to live in those shoes. And all of us are connected to a teacher in some way. We all
had them.
Yeah, we all had them for sure. So then you knew you needed a break, and I'd love to hear what you moved into.
So everything for me, I think, because I don't like plans and because I don't like predictable, it's always just a fly by the seat of your pants kind of thing.
Yeah.
Right. Like, you know, the whole idea of like.
Yeah, you didn't make this big business plan. No.
No, I don't have a business plan. Yeah. I'm working on that now.
Right.
A year in. So, you know.
Which, by the way, that's good for our listeners to hear too, though, because there's not just one way to do it. Some people slide into it and then go, oh, and then begin to make the business plan. Yeah.
Right. Well, why make a big business plan if your business won't work out?
Right.
You got to make sure the business is going to work out before you do all that planning.
Yeah. I love it. My type A listeners are like,
I know. So in the middle of all of this, with COVID and me feeling like I needed a little bit of a break, but I honestly felt so much camaraderie and so much connection with my team at Tuckahoe Elementary School. And I loved them so much and leaned on them so much that I didn't feel the need to go anywhere right away. I knew these feelings were like coming up and I was getting angry, and they knew I was angry about this. I said, guys, come on, you know, this is ridiculous. What are we doing? You know, we deserve more. And so I was just starting to get heated, but on a totally, completely different note, I've always been obsessed with wallpaper. It's weird.
Wallpaper, paint, redecorating, reorganizing, painting.
I mean, you've seen it. You've seen it firsthand, haven't you?
And met your house. You walk in and you're like, oh, we picked a different color scheme and we did it all night long.
Maybe you've seen me paint the back of a rug. When I couldn't afford to buy a new rug.
Oh my God. I love that story. You wanted so badly a new rug and you're like, can't afford one. So you flipped over a rug and painted it.
Spray painted stripes on the back of it.
Isn't that, come on. That new is rug. New rug. So many pieces of furniture, new slap of paint, you know, you're like, look.
Sewing curtains, new, whatever.
Yeah, whatever. It was right? So great. So much fun to walk over. Okay. Yes. So you always love that.
Yeah. So anyway, I go into some phase of my weird in-home decorating that never fully gets finished and it changes before it can ever find its vision. I decided I wanted this oyster wallpaper. I'm from Urbana. Oysters are a big thing on the Rappahannock River. I really wanted these beautiful oysters and I could not find them anywhere. So I went through this whole thingamabob of trying to get them printed on some wallpaper. I couldn't do it. So I had a birthday party for my 41st birthday. I asked my girlfriends to come over, help me paint my living room and paint some wallpaper. Okay. So I still have it. It's underneath my current wallpaper, but I pull it back and look at it.
Because it's part of the story, right?
It's part of the story. So I came up with the wallpaper design. It wasn't oysters. I knew that was going to be too hard. These are not, my friends are not artists. Okay.
No.
Friends. So I came up with the design at a stoplight. And so whenever I pull back whatever wallpaper I have in my kitchen, because I own a peel and stick wallpaper company that easily comes off, whenever I pull it back and I see what we painted that day, I call it stoplight friendship. That's the name of the pattern. So I have to actually print it soon. I've got to get it on wallpaper.
You do. So
anyway, we painted stoplight friendship in my kitchen and it's beautiful and I love it. And about a month later, I go to a soccer game and I'm speaking to this man, and I had taught his children. His name is Ryan Fisher, by the way. I love him. I love his wife, Katie Fisher. They are fabulous. Some of my favorite people. And I'm talking to Ryan and he says to me something about peel and stick wallpaper. And I'm like, oh yeah. And he goes, well, I bought a print shop during COVID and it has a machine that makes peel and stick wallpaper. And I was like, I'm sorry. We're just on a soccer sideline. I barely know this man. And I'm like, what did you say? And he goes, yeah, I have a machine that can make peel and stick wallpaper. And I said, anything on anything? And he goes, yeah, but this friend of mine had me print something and I tried to hang in her bathroom and I'm all stuck in it and it's all sticky and I don't know what I'm doing. And I said, look, I'll go hang your friend's bathroom if you print me out these leopards and these oysters. So he goes, sure. Okay. So funny enough, Richmond's so small. I go to knock on this strange woman's door and I knock on the door and I'm like, God, I've got to hang wallpaper in this lady's bathroom and I don't know her. And she opens the door and I'm like, oh my God, I know you.
Of course. We
had too much to drink together last Saturday night at that. We've already bonded the week before. So I go in, hang her bathroom. Comes out great. Ryan Fisher prints me these two rolls. And I've used Anthropology. I have used Hygiene West. I have used Target. I've used Amazon. I've used Walmart. Name a brand. I've used Next Wall. You name a brand of peel and stick wallpaper. I've used it.
And it was just not right.
It was just not my design, right? Some of it was worse than others. Some of it was better than others.
Yeah, sure.
My point is, I just seen everything that's out there, ordered it all. And when Ryan gave me these two rolls of wallpaper, I was like, oh, this is stunning. It is so far above and beyond quality-wise any paper I've ever seen on the market. It is beautiful. We can custom design it to be anything we want. It is just stunning. And so as soon as I saw those two rolls, I said, oh my gosh, this stuff is so beautiful, Ryan. We've got to sell it. And he's like, and I mean, poor Ryan. He doesn't know me. I'm saying we. Like we now are in this together.
He's like, what's happening?
Ryan, I promise you, I'm going to make you rich. I swear I'm working on it. Okay. I am, because I dragged him into this. Right. And I know there are days that he wants me dead. Because I started this wallpaper company.
Right.
You know, on a whim.
Right, right. He just got, and I know you. You pulled him right in, and he didn't even know what was happening.
He didn't. So next thing I know, this is how it happened. Next thing I know, we have a website.
Yep. Whoops.
I know. I always say I accidentally started a paper company.
Yep.
So next thing I know, we have a website. And then thanks to the shops at 5807, they were kind of the people who helped us hit the ground running. Kate Thomas is the owner. She does such a phenomenal job. If you live in the Richmond area and you haven't been to the shops at 5807, you've got to check it out. She commissioned us to do what's now the 5807 print. We did a beautiful wrap on her cash wrap. We've done her dressing rooms. We did her bathroom, which led us to more. We also have a wholesale shop in there. I'm sorry, a retail shop where we sell our paper in there. Then we went into Hampton House and did a beautiful Hampton House design, which if you haven't been to Hampton House, it's also stunning. We've just moved into Baggio. We're going to do Pegasus Restaurant next. We've got a website. So we're installing.
Yeah.
You know, and this spun out of control while I was teaching.
Yes. So, yeah, I remember watching your videos. You're teaching, hanging all night. I was like,
and then I'm like, Ryan, poor Ryan, I'm saying to him who didn't sign up for this. Oh, sorry. Let me also add, we did a salon downtown. Also, Lindsay Velasco Lewis owns that. And we did their logo on a 14 by 20 foot wall.
Mm-hmm. And you really have the eye for design too, then, because you have to design these sometimes, right?
Yes. I mean, so Lindsay brought me her logo, and she gave me the vector file, and we did that. Amazing. She did that, and then she's the green room in Jackson Ward. I think it's Jackson Ward, right near Boulevard. Yeah, on in Richmond. She brought me her own design, and we blew it up to a huge scale. Wow. Which, thanks to Ryan and his shop, he owns Imagine This Company, and him and his workers did all that. Then we get other people who, Kate from 5807, she just happened to like a print that then became hers. Mm-hmm. Hampton House, we designed it together, the owner and I. Baggio, we designed it together, the owner and I. Pegasus, we'll design it together. So I have a number of prints that you can choose from that I just designed, or we can work together to make whatever you want.
And so, here you are. So here you are.
Here we are.
It's full time now. Now I have to, I talked to you ahead of time, so I have to call a few things out. I loved when you told me what was the biggest challenge when going from a teacher to an entrepreneur.
Well, you know, so me going into an office environment, when I said my first job, I hated it so much.
Yeah.
Because it was so predictable. I can't stand that. But what teaching does is it gives you a very predictable structure.
And you also got to decide within those bubbles what to do.
So when you work in a very well-run school, your day is structured for you just basically in time increments. So 7 to 7:20 is breakfast and attendance. 8 to 9 is reading. 9 to 10 is math. 10 to 11 is science. Recess is here. Lunch is here. So it's these blocks of time.
Yeah.
For someone like me, who is so willy-nilly and so all over the place, that was all I needed to stay in my zone mm-hmm. of time management and getting goals accomplished, right? If I knew by Friday, I had to have this task in reading done,
mm-hmm.
and I had a 1 hour block every day at the same time to get it done, that was very easy for me to work with it. But then when I come out on the other end owning a business, that I've never done before. Well, actually, I do. I own the Glam Box. We have another little business.
Oh, that's right. That's a
once a month type of thing.
Right. But tell them what the Glam Box is very quickly.
So my husband, during COVID, he lost all these shifts in the emergency room because people were hesitating to go to the emergency room. And he's an ER doctor. So his salary quickly plummeted as well with COVID because nobody needed as many ER docs as they typically did. People were just staying out of the emergency room for a while. And I decided that my girlfriends also weren't able to get their Botox. So let's turn our garage into a Botox studio, which we've done. And it's a boutique.
It's so cute, too. It's so cute.
We took the garage doors out. We put all of the drywall up and we turned this into a Botox boutique, which my husband, we're very busy. It's called the Glam Box, Glam Box Botox. It's just one doctor. It's just him. And we have a little cult following and we probably have 125 patients and we're booked out, but it's tiny.
Yeah.
I do think though, that was the segue that gave me the courage.
I bet. Right. And what is like Amy call you? What is like Amy always says mom's working on her? Like,
oh, she calls them my lemonade stands.
Yeah.
You know, they're my lemonade stands. They're these jobs that I keep making that, you know, but here was what happened. So now, right, Sunday, like you're saying, I'm waking up on a Monday. I have to learn. I have to create a serious business plan. I've got to pay the taxes. I've got to get payroll. I've got to hire some people. Ugh. I've got to get a marketing strategy. I've got to get goals set. I've got to figure out how to make things easier for Ryan at his shop, which is Imagine This. So him and his employees don't want to kill me.
Yeah.
I need to figure out profit margins. And it's like, you have all the time in the whole wide world, yet no time at all to do it.
And because you're still at the point where you're hanging it. So you're at that entrepreneurial place where you're building it and doing the work. You're not quite at the place where you're building it and someone else is doing the work. Correct. That's always the toughest place. And so you're busy all the time and yet you've got to get to that point where it's like, who's hanging it so I can build the,
Correct. Yeah. And I have an assistant named Dalia who has been with me through thick and thin. Mm-hmm. And she says that when she's worked for me for 5 years. She started as my nanny. She was our pod teacher.
Oh yeah, I totally know her. Yes.
She said she never knows.
She's been through everything with you.
Like, well, she said when she gets to my house, she never knows what hat she's gonna wear. Some days I'm like, Aaliyah, you've got to watch the dog. And then the next day I'm like, Aaliyah, you need to be a teacher. All of a sudden we have 6 kids that come here every day. Then one day I was like, Aaliyah, do you mind going and helping spackle at the, you know, rental property? She was like, some days I'm an engineer. Some days I'm a chef. Some days I'm a teacher.
See, now she's special. Yeah. She's special though, because some people have a personality type that they could not, they would be like, I can't stand that lady. Because I never know what my job description is, but she has something in her that's actually similar to you, where she's like kind of energized by the variety.
Well, yeah. And you know, I know there have been times where she is quietly wishing me dead. Like she is quietly wishing me dead.
Yeah.
My ride or die. I tell you what, I say, Aaliyah, hey, put on a nice outfit and go sell some wallpaper down at the such and such. Yeah. And there she goes, you know, I couldn't do it without her. She is really my right-hand person. Every time she says she's going to go work somewhere full-time, I just make up more things for her to do. But right now she's transitioning into my paper hanging role. I've got another guy that I called who I really enjoyed. He's fabulous. So I'm trying to figure out how to start unloading this stuff.
Yeah.
But it's such an early phase of it, and wallpaper is all visual.
Yeah.
So it has to be close to perfect in the beginning stages. Yeah. So it's almost like I need to kind of continue to manage it for just a little while longer. Sure. Hand it off. Also, Aaliyah's learning it very well. Mm-hmm. And so slowly I'll hand that off. But this is tough for me to try to figure out steps. Mm-hmm.
The steps. And you know what? That's kind of one of the reasons I wish Steve could hear. He will hear it, but he does a lot of, he's an entrepreneur himself, and so many entrepreneurs face this very same thing though. It's like, they're so excited about an idea, but now they're like, I have to figure out the organization and the steps. It's the hardest
part. Well, I told you, you know, and I started waking up at 4 a.m. and stressing, you know, have I checked my emails? Have I looked at this? Have I called these people? Have I gotten back to this? It was something that slipped through the cracks. And then I had the realization, like I think I told you this about a month ago, that I was laying in bed and I was like, oh no, I think I own a real company.
Yeah. Yes. And you're not alone, even as an individual, but also on the other end, on the corporate side, this is also what happens to companies. So this is also happens. Two people might get together and they're like, hey, I have an idea. And now they have 30 employees and they're making a lot of money. And all of a sudden they realize they have a organization of people who work for them and they have no culture. No, they're like, we have to create a culture. And they're like, oh God. So it's like, it's even one step further. And that's a big aha moment.
And I've wondered how that happens. Like, you know, how did Amazon go from selling books to what they're doing now? Like somebody had to line all of that.
Yeah, they did. And so each step will happen for you. I also thought it was really funny the other day when you were like, I loved when you were like describing my job to someone. You were reading to some, you were like, let me tell you about my friend Sundy.
So, you know, here I am. I've known Sundy for 20 years. It feels like, what has it really been? Probably 15. Well,
yeah. 11, because Leah and Amir are 11.
Yeah. Yes. So 11 years I've known you. And, you know, all the time I've known Sundy, I've known she is a coach and I know that she helps people with careers, right? And this is her main thing she does in life. So the other day, you know, I have this realization in the morning that I may or may not own a business. That what the weight of that, though, is now that it's concrete and real, you can tank it or you can grow it.
You can. Mm-hmm.
And you're at this pivotal point where you have to do one or the other, and you need to do that well.
Yes.
So I've decided not to tank it.
Yes. I'm so excited. It. Yes.
But I'm like, what do I do first? Who do I talk to first? I'm overwhelmed. I'm underwhelmed. I'm confused. And then, so my friend says, what are you doing next week? I said, I'm going to go skiing, but then I'm going to be on my Sunday's podcast. And I'm sure it was Ryan or somebody. And I said, let me read you her bio. And then I go on her website and it says, are you overwhelmed? Are you underwhelmed? Are you confused about what to do next? Meet with Sunday Marquardt, the career coach. And go,
you're like, what? Why?
This whole time was Sunday, and I never once thought to myself, hey, call Sunday.
Right, because it's like too close to you, which is what happens in a lot of people's lives. It's like sometimes when your friend group, it's like you forget that that's the doctor. You're like, oh, yeah.
Whoa. Sunday.
Yeah.
I really need to talk to you.
So it's fun because we are doing this, and then we actually put a real appointment on our calendars where we're going to like not talk about our kids.
Sunday's going to actually help me do what she does best.
Right. But I love that you came. And I think that's a great point right there, that you came to this pivotal point. And you're right. You can either say, it's going to scare me and I'm going to walk away. But you're taking on the challenge. And you're like, of course you are, by the way, Lauren. I would be surprised if you didn't. But it is overwhelming and scary. But it's also exciting. Yeah. Okay. So we've talked for over an hour. So we got to end this.
Okay.
What would you just say in closing? What would you say? Whatever's on your mind, what would you say, either on the teacher side, on the entrepreneur side? Just like, how did it feel to talk about this today?
it felt great to talk about it. And I think what was striking me this morning as I was thinking about this conversation is that I never have a plan. But because of that, I'm always open to any opportunity that presents itself. And it has led to some really awesome opportunities in life.
Beautifully said. And that gives a lot of people in a particularly different personality bucket a lot of hope.
Or just makes them really, really scared. And they think that's a terrible thought.
But we're not going to talk about that.
Maybe if I were type A, I'd be the president of something huge.
Right. Well, I thank you. Thank you so much.
We love you, Sunday. You're the best.
Yes.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much.